Hello and welcome to Hysteria. I'm Erin Ryan.
And I'm Alyssa Mastromonaco.
Alyssa, I feel like it's time to retire the name Super Tuesday. Super has not been earned.
It wasn't super. It's a mediocre Tuesday.
It's a fine Tuesday.
Should we call it any other Tuesday?
A busy Tuesday. Why don't we call it a busy
Tuesday?
It's a busy Tuesday. I feel like calling it Super Tuesday really sets up expectations, and it's not. It should earn the title of Super.
I also thought it always made it sound like a tampon.
Super Plus Tuesday.
Super Plus Tuesday. It's not. It's a light Tuesday.
Alyssa, we've got a fun show this week. A lot of news.
So fun. Good guest.
Great guest. We love Robin Given. She is a senior critic at large at the Washington Post, and I think one of the sharpest minds out there when it comes to cultural observation, especially
yes.
with respect to like fashion and fashion as a means of making a political statement.
We talk a little Super Tuesday.
Little Super Tuesday. We talk about Nikki Haley. We talk about the action that's going on in the States because that is where the action is. North Carolina, a little bit of woof. California, a little bit of disappointed head shake.
Yeah.
Ohio, optimistic forward.
Coming soon.
Optimistic, forward-looking hopefulness. We've also got some news about the abortion pill being available over-the-counter in certain states.
We do. And then you actually do a great job of breaking down a controversy around a bottle of maple syrup or syrup, however you choose to say it.
It is the most we've ever talked about the state of South Dakota.
It's delicious.
I mean, look, a knock wood, because Kristi Noem ends up being, if she gets nominated to be VP, we're going to talk about South Dakota a lot more. But for now, the most exciting thing out of South Dakota is this syrup thing that just happened. And I can't wait for you all to
hear. Don't spoil it.
All about it. And then, of course, we have Sanity Corner / I Feel Petty. I've got a book for you. Alyssa's got something that is not petty.
It's not petty, but you should pay attention.
We've got a great show for you. Stick around. All right. You're listening to Hysteria, the podcast for people who would never go feet out on Maine.
Ever.
Never.
Like what?
People from WikiFeet are watching. They are watching and they're screen grabbing.
And I don't want to know if my feet are good or bad.
Yeah, I've got to say, I've talked about this on the show before. Back in a time when I didn't know not to put your feet out, there's a couple pictures with my feet in the picture, and they did make it to WikiFeet.
Gross.
It's, yeah. The feet people are really
creepers.
Dogged.
Yeah.
They're really dogged. So, yeah, don't do it. And, of course, we're referring to Colorado Representative Lauren Boebert, who posted a truly weird thing to Facebook.
She is messy.
Look, it's not nice to call people trash, but she's so trashy.
Well, I used messy instead of trash.
Yeah, I think it's fair to say trashy. Like, why do we even have the word trashy if it can't be applied
in this instance, in which it is 100% accurate?
In this instance and in a cumulative description of her general conduct, I think it's fair. In more serious and consequential news, Super Tuesday is behind us.
Mm-hmm.
It was kind of a yawn.
It happened.
It happened and it's done. I feel as though this is going to be some media criticism here.
Okay.
I feel as though a lot of people who are currently working in political media got really 2008 and 2016 pilled. Like, those were some exciting primary races. And now we calibrate our expectations for primary season based on how many fireworks there were during those primary seasons. And you can't, you know?
You can't. And as you and I have discussed, is it really good for America when it's exciting?
No, it's really, for a lot of people whose lives are directly affected by the policies and politics of the people running, and the rhetoric makes them afraid or excited. It's just, it's a lot of emotional manipulation, and it takes a lot of energy. All right. Nikki Haley's out.
She's out.
She's
I woke
out.
Up to that news this morning.
Yeah. How do you feel about it?
Who cares? I mean, it seemed inevitable. Like, Donald Trump's cleaning house slash the delegate map. So she doesn't have much left. And apparently she had some metrics that she had set for herself for Super Tuesday that advisors on background said they didn't meet. And so she stepped down. She did not endorse Trump, though.
I respect her for that. There are a few things I respect Nikki Haley for, but that's one of those things. And I'm glad that she stayed in the race for long enough to continue to sound the alarm to receptive audiences that the person that she's running against is like a, what, 91-time felony indicted.
Yeah, problematic.
sex monster. Legally, he is a sex monster.
He's a pest in every way.
That was determined in a court that he definitely is a sex monster and he owes E. Jean Carroll, like...
Money.
A lot of money that he's not going to have to pay. And then in other news, Mitch McConnell announced on Wednesday that he is endorsing Donald Trump. Brave.
Aaron,
so brave.
I can't with cable news. They're trying to give McConnell look, you know me. I love to give people the benefit of the doubt. Not this time, Mitch. No, sir. You don't get the cable news anchors to be like, McConnell begrudgingly has endorsed Trump. First of all, his voice always sounds like that, number one. And two, it's a binary choice. It's like being pregnant. You are or you aren't. Mm-hmm. You've endorsed him. It doesn't matter how you did it. You did it. That's it. Done. You did it.
If I begrudgingly eat an entire carrot cake, my ass is still going to get bigger.
You have eaten the carrot cake.
You've still eaten the carrot cake, dude. It doesn't matter if you're crying when you do it. You still ate the carrot cake.
Right.
He's really a portrait of courage until the very end. I think that we got Wednesday or Thursday last week with his announcement.
We got Thursday, yeah.
Yeah, with his announcement that he was going to be stepping down from Senate leadership. I feel a little bit about the news that McConnell is not going to be in charge of the Republicans in the Senate anymore the same way I feel about news when I hear that a major drug lord has been arrested. I'm like, okay, well, that's one bad guy, but oof, who's going to take what's going to happen to the people?
Right. One of three or four Johns, literally, white men named John who will replace him?
That's enough. Moratorium on being named John. Sorry, John and John. No more Johns. And then, you know, in my state of California, we had a Senate primary yesterday. Mm-hmm. I'm going to just say that the interest in the California election was very low. I don't know why. People were sort of disengaged. And up until the very end, I think as of this Friday, something like 90% of people hadn't returned their ballots. They make voting
really?
They make voting very easy in California. They like, first of all, if you can find your ballot in the mailbox full of literal campaign garbage that gets just stuffed into your mailbox every single day for the last month of the campaign. But they send you a ballot. They send you a voting guide. There are signs everywhere that are like, vote here. Like, you can show up in person. The ballot drop boxes are everywhere. They're very visible. And people still just like really didn't vote. And there was, we have open primaries in this mm-hmm. state, which means that people from all the different political parties run, and the top two vote getters typically go into a runoff for the general. And so that means in a lot of cases, in a place as Democratic as California, the top two candidates are Democrats going into mm-hmm. the general. So the Senate primary was really stacked with interesting Democrats. We had Adam Schiff, I think two decades of service in the House of Representatives. We had Katie Porter, just absolute viral hit.
Whiteboard magic.
Whiteboard magician. We had Barbara Lee, one of the bravest and historically most correct members mm-hmm. of the legislative branch. Extremely big metal balls on Barbara Lee, and I say that with utmost admiration. And Adam Schiff ended up coming out on top. And one of the things that he did, and I'm just going to say this, I don't like to talk shit about Democrats, but it left a bad taste in my mouth, the way that Adam Schiff won. Adam Schiff got first. Steve Garvey, completely inexperienced baseball man, and Republican got second place. And part of the reason he got second place was because Adam Schiff's campaign ran ads against Steve Garvey that were deliberately designed to raise awareness of Steve Garvey and get Republicans to vote for him because he didn't want to run against Katie Porter in a runoff. I don't like that. I did not like this.
This feels, for lack of a better word, very uncool.
And I'm going to say this. Adam Schiff has some views, especially when it comes to Israel, that are problematic with a huge portion of the California Democratic voting base. I don't think that it's going to be a skate to the finish line that maybe his advisors believe it's going to be. I think that there are people, Barbara Lee voters and Katie Porter voters, I think that there are enough people that are angry enough that they may sit out the general, like, or leave it blank because they don't want to vote for Adam Schiff. And I think that's not great strategy. I think that it's not really, I mean, we saw what happened when people got mad and took their ball and went home in 2016. No revolution happened and nothing got done. And we're still going to be trying to clean up the damage for the next two decades. So a protest vote in 2016, kind of not necessarily always the greatest thing to do. I am just worried that Adam Schiff just made things harder on himself than he needed to, and harder on the Democrats and more nerve-wracking than he needed to.
Well, and also, in one of the bigger bummers, it'll be the first time in 30 years that California is not represented by a female senator.
Yeah. Yeah, we went from having Dianne Feinstein, who, you know, toward the end was maybe not doing the best job representing.
May she rest in peace.
Yeah. May she have rested earlier.
Fair.
You know, take it. And I don't mean. Yeah. Anyway, we had Feinstein and Kamala Harris. So we went from those two. 5 years later, we're going to end up, regardless, one way or another, with two male senators.
Totally. And before Kamala, Barbara Boxer for how many years?
Yeah.
I mean, you guys have been the luckiest state for so long.
Yeah. I mean, you know, I get it. Men are underrepresented in the California Senate delegation.
So much so.
One of the only places in America where men are not as represented. But I also don't think, I think Senator Padilla is a fine senator. And I think that Adam Schiff will do a fine job. But, you know, it's not the out. I would have preferred that he run against Porter or Lee, and that contest would have really brought up some policy differences between Democrats and some thoughtful, fruitful discussions.
Which is fine.
Yeah.
Right? Like, why do we try? Like, it's okay for Democrats to have policy differences. It's when, you know, you try to edge the differences out that it's not good vibes.
Yeah, I mean, we went from having this embarrassment of riches in the primary to having this contest between fucking baseball man with no experience and Adam Schiff. And I don't want to discount baseball man because...
No!
I mean, people have pointed out that having a Republican on the ballot in the Senate race might be energizing for Republicans in California, whose vote a lot of times feels like an exercise in futility.
Yes.
I mean, I hope that the gamble that Schiff made to basically run ads for Steve Garvey pays off.
Yes. Because you don't want the complacency that happened here in New York, where we're like largely responsible for the majority Republicans have in the House.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah.
Asleep at the wheel over here in New York.
Fuck you, New York.
Yeah, see?
But then,
the coasts are terrible.
If we lose this Senate seat, fuck me. Fuck all of us. You know, this
fucks all around.
Fucks all around. Let's move on to North Carolina. We're going to get more into North Carolina as we get closer to the general because North Carolina is low-key one of the most important states.
100%.
And a lot of the action is happening at the local and state level, as it's happening in most places. But this is super consequential. North Carolina is running a really reasonable, good dude for Democrats, Josh Stein, against a nutbag.
An absolute crackpot.
An absolute nutbag named Mark Robinson. I'm just going to go through some things that the 19th enumerated about what Robinson has said and done.
Yes,
this
please.
Is just a list. He has a long history of making anti-LGBTQ comments that are too gross to repeat, saying God formed him to fight against LGBTQ acceptance. Why did he form the gay people then, dude? Like, didn't he form them too? He's for a 6-week abortion ban. He compares abortion to slavery. Here's a real quick pause. Mm. If in red states, state governments are fighting to remove references to slavery from textbooks, then what are they going to compare abortion to when they're making hyperbolic?
Well, Aaron, they're obviously going to carve out exceptions for the use of the word slavery only as it relates to abortion.
Right. So all you can know is that it's bad. That's it. But otherwise, it didn't exist.
Bad.
Okay. So Mark Robinson likens abortion to slavery, which is not a thing he came up with, because none of these people are anything but hacks. He has said we get it down to 12, then 6 weeks, and keep moving from there. Trump has called him Martin Luther King on steroids. I think that's because Robinson is black and Martin Luther King is one of the only black people that Donald Trump Trump knows the name of. He is absolutely insane. Like, the thing that, and he's also, I think, like a Holocaust denier.
Yeah, he hates Jews. He hates women.
He hates Jews and he hates women. He is a crackpot. And as I was reading about him this week, I was thinking, isn't it funny that if America has like its own Hitler or Pinochet or Pol Pot, or his name is going to be something like Steve or Mark.
Rob. Yeah.
Like,
There was this bad man named Chad.
Yeah, but there's so many bad Steves out there. I'm like, imagine if Steve Hitler, Mark Pinochet, like these people have ideas that they have these like golden retriever man names and these like actual monster ideologies. And now one of those people with monster ideologies is running for governor in North Carolina. There are too many smart people in North Carolina to let this happen. There are too many good people in North Carolina to let this happen. There are. Like,
we have to assume. We have to hope.
I know you're tired, guys, but evil never sleeps, you know? Like,
imagine the damage. Imagine the damage Mr. Robinson could do if Trump were also president.
It's really, really hard to wrap your head around. Here's a conversation that I, you know, my friend's group chat was kind of getting into recently. And, you know, a lot of us in my group of friends have daughters. Mm-hmm. And one of my friends was like, I hope our daughters, you know, eventually Roe comes back. You know, I hope Roe comes back for our daughters when our daughters get older.
Yeah.
And, you know, obviously it also benefits sons, you know, whatever.
Benefits everybody.
But the actual physical bodies of our daughters are on the line, right?
Of course.
And, you know, I think that something that doesn't get talked about enough is that the path to Roe being back is so long. In order for that to happen, we would need the White House, the House of Representatives, and a filibuster-proof majority in the Senate, or a Senate willing to get rid of the filibuster in order to protect abortion.
Right.
The timeline on when that could possibly happen, I mean, yeah, anything could happen in the fall, but let's be realistic. A realistic timeline, 8-12 years, maybe?
Yeah.
8-12 years. And so whatever is happening in your state, whoever is in charge of your state is going to determine bodily autonomy, not only for people who are, you know, AFAB women, but also for trans kids, also for non-binary people, for anybody who wants to do anything to their body, even for somebody who wants to, like, get permanent sterilization or permanent birth control or a vasectomy or use IVF. Like, all of this shit depends on who is in charge of your state now, because Roe ain't coming back, not for a long time. I would love it if it came back like ASAP, but the path to it coming back is long. It is,
and not for nothing, the Supreme Court is going to look the way it looks now for a pretty long time.
Yes, the worst people on the court might outlive me. You know,
I mean, Erin, they're like my age. I, Jesus Christ.
It is, it's time to stop being like, well, they'll die. No, they won't.
No.
They won't. These like awful, I'm doing research this week for a new This Fucking Guy.
Which is going to be a banger.
It's a banger, but it's a historical This Fucking Guy, and it's a woman. It's a dead old lady. But she lived to be 92 years old. I can say she's mm-hmm. dead. It's factually correct. And you can laugh, and it's not mean because it's also funny that she's dead. She's 90. She died at 92, though. Like, we can't be like, oh, all these people with this, like, hurtful ideology are going to die off, and the young people are going to replace them. No, they're not.
No. No, they're not. That's great. That is stupid thinking.
Yeah, it's really, it's not stupid. It's Pollyanna. We can't depend on.
That's nicer.
We can't depend on the arc of history bending toward progress. That is such a passive, like, and then everything's going to turn out thing. Like, I don't think it does.
No.
Like,
this is the time you have to accept that there are going to be like guerrilla tactics involved in protecting abortion rights, and that's where we're at. That's it.
Yeah, the worst people in the world don't care how annoying they are. They don't care how many people they make sad. They don't care how many people's lives they make worse. They don't care. They think they're fighting a holy war against against the happiness of people who don't agree with them. And it's really, and it sucks. It sucks. It's just, it's never going to end. But Roe is not coming back. The only thing standing in between you and bodily autonomy is whoever is in charge of your state house.
Yes. And so you got to vote.
You got to vote. You have to, like, it sucks.
Even if you're tired.
Even if you're
tired.
Even if
you got to vote.
Even if you Mitch McConnell it. Even if you begrudgingly vote. Even if you even if you cry on the way there and then, you know, get home and eat an entire carrot cake, you have to do it. You
got to vote.
You've got to. Another really consequential race, the Ohio Supreme Court. The primary is on March 19th because Ohio mm-hmm. can't do anything the normal way.
Well, normally they matter, right? They want their own. They want to stake out their own day in the calendar because all eyes are on Ohio. But this year, it's a little more boring than usual.
Right. Well, it actually on the Ohio level, it's not like boring.
Correct.
If you live in Ohio, this is super important, and you are about to, like, this is going to be the third, like, non-federal major election in a row that is super important. The Ohio Supreme Court could flip, and here's why that matters. Because last year, you know, anybody from Ohio will remember this, you passed Issue 1, which put abortion on the state constitution, the access to abortion on the state constitution. The state's Republican Attorney General, Dave Yost, says that actually, abortion bans can still be in effect because those words don't mean what those words mean, even though they're in the Constitution. You need to get a Supreme Court that's going to agree that words mean things.
Mm-hmm.
And the way that you do that is by voting on March 19th.
Yes.
Oh, no. Kyrsten Sinema is not going to run for re-election.
She's not running for re-election.
Oh, no.
She's stepped out. And, I mean, here's the thing, though. I think we hope it's a good thing because there is some gossip out in Arizona that a lot of people supporting her were actually kind of Republicans because she's extremely moderate.
And, she's not moderate. She's chaotic.
I know that. I put let me air quote it so you can see my air quotes. So we hope that that this is in fact a good thing.
Uh-huh.
Thank you for your service. There you go.
I say good riddance, but that means that we've got a matchup between Carrie Lake and Ruben Gallego. Carrie Lake, certified insane person.
She did, but she's one of these people trying to backtrack on her history. She's trying to seem a smidgen more moderate now.
Yeah.
Don't be asleep at the wheel, people in Arizona. She is a bad, bad lady.
She's a bad lady. And here's something I did want to shout out real quick. She ran for governor and lost against Katie Hobbs. Katie Hobbs, if you're paying attention to what she's doing in Arizona, it is quietly a lot of really good shit.
Yeah, she's killing it out there.
She just bought up a bunch of, she announced that they're buying a bunch of medical debt. and just forgiving it for Arizonans. Low-key, Katie Hobbs is kind of killing it quietly. Yeah. So just vote for whoever's running against Carrie Lake and you're going to get a better deal.
100%.
Okay. Ooh, Alyssa, are you going to run to CVS and or Walgreens?
Oh, let's give a little shout out. CVS and Walgreens are now providing abortion pills, aka mifepristone, in some states where it is legal to dispense the drug under the FDA guidelines issued about a year ago. Erin, how great is that?
That's really good. I read something recently about people who do not need abortions or want abortions currently stockpiling abortion pills.
Yeah.
And I think in order to get them from CVS and Walgreens, you can't just like waltz in there and be like, one abortion, please. although that would be funny. And I would. No, I don't want to do that now. People would be upset. I'm like visibly pregnant.
Like, yeah. Yeah.
Very.
We're just going to save that for later. We'll save that funny trick for later.
It would be. See, I would look, it could be a funny joke if I knew that I was physically safe, but I think people would like someone would tackle me and be like, no, it's too late.
Absolutely not. But just as like a reminder, the FDA approved the abortion pill over 20 years ago. Now, this is good news. I wouldn't say I'm going to use this as just a little shout out for our friends across the Atlantic. It's not exactly France. Erin, earlier this week, France. Bunch of jubilant parliamentarians voted 780-72 to revise the country's 1958 constitution to enshrine abortion, thereby making it the first country in the world to do so. Now, that's not America, but we will definitely take the good deeds of CVS and Walgreens trying to solve our problems and keep us safe.
Yeah, okay, wait a second. I just got to pause real quick. 780-72, that is like beaucoup members of parliament.
It's
in
beaucoup. I watched the vote happening, and it was goosebumpy.
I know,
it
but that's like, how did they do it in a soccer stadium? Like that's so
it was
many.
Big.
That's so many
it was,
people.
It looked like an amazing. Also, everything over there is just so beautiful. I was like, it was the same thing, Erin. I'm like, am I watching like Lincoln Center or is this French Parliament?
Everyone looks so chic. This is something that I have noticed. So France's abortion. Access rights are that abortion is available without restriction up to 14 weeks it's covered 100% by state-sponsored healthcare. If you want an abortion, you can just go do it and it's totally fine. I feel like French maybe are better at the math here, which is that it is, you know, if somebody doesn't want to be a parent for whatever reason or doesn't want to go through pregnancy and childbirth for whatever reason, it is a more cost-effective measure to aid them in ending their pregnancy than it is to force them to have a child and all the attendant expenses that come, like, at the expense of the state as a result of, like, a child that you, like, didn't want in the first place. One thing that I see a lot in the U.S. when they bandy about the idea of a 15-week national ban, which, again, arbitrary number, a lot of times you see ban proponents saying that in many other countries there are abortion cutoffs, and they cite places like France.
Right.
I just want to point out that a ban in America would be nothing like the limitations in France. The only way that it would be in any way parallel is that the government was like, yes, there's a 15-week ban, but we pay for 100% of it up to 15 weeks, no questions asked. And so otherwise, it's a completely stupid comparison to make. And the person inviting you to make that comparison is unserious. I just wanted to point that out.
No. And then just a little practical information for our listeners. Walgreens will have the pills available in New York, Pennsylvania, Massachusetts, California, and Illinois. CVS will have them in all Massachusetts and Rhode Island pharmacies in the weeks ahead. This is just the start of the rollout. And I appreciate how Walgreens and CVS are being aggressive because they are looking to expand into states like Kansas, Montana, and Wyoming, where abortion bans or strict limitations have been enacted but are enjoined because of legal challenges. Thank you so much.
That's great. I think that if you are in one of those states, you should also check to make sure there aren't like conscience laws on the books.
Yes.
Because sometimes I've heard stories and there have been news stories of people trying to obtain abortion and contraception and having a pharmacist be like, no, I don't believe in this part of my job. And it's in some places that is legal, unfortunately, and in other places it's not. So you're going to have to legally blonde the regulations around what pharmacists are allowed to refuse to dispense before you do that. Okay, let's see. What else do we want to talk about? Oh, let's talk about Women's History Month.
Should we?
Yeah, let's talk. It's March.
It's our time.
Congratulations, women. We did it.
We've made it. But it's always Women's History Month here on Hysteria. Mm-hmm. But to celebrate, we're going to share a little fun fact. I mean, it's not that fun, but it's definitely a fact. And I like to tell listeners where these things come from. So Caroline texted us this article, and I only read the headline and was like, holy shit, this seems terrible. And Aaron was like, actually, it's not that bad. So we thought, if that's what all three of us, if that was the conversation the three of us had, that you should know too. So recently, a post went viral on social media stating that, quote, in Missouri, Texas, Arizona, and Arkansas, judges cannot legally finalize a divorce if a woman is pregnant. That sounded terrible. But we're here to tell you, it sounds worse than it actually is.
Yeah. I mean, it's still bad. It's still bad.
It's still bad. But this is like an effort at efficiency, I guess.
Yeah.
They're saying that they're just trying to save the judge the work of having to do a divorce hearing and a custody hearing separately, so they wait until the baby is born so they can work the custody thing out all in one fell swoop.
Mm-hmm. So it's
okay.
So it's about finalizing the divorce, and
right.
I think that I get it. The judicial calendars are crowded. I get that, but I feel like that should be allowed. It should be allowed. Sorry, judge.
Right.
Schedule a separate hearing. You got to finalize the divorce and then do the custody thing. Married couples in those states can file for divorce at any time and take steps in the process at any time, so you can legally separate your assets. Like, if you have a partner who is like financially abusive to you, you can cut off the way in which you are responsible for their financial abuse in the filing of the divorce process. The states are concerned with like determining the paternity of a baby and then issuing like child support stuff. Another thing that's a little bit confusing about this is like, newborn should not have shared custody. I'm just going to say.
Totally.
Newborns are basically organs of, like, honestly, they are like an organ that lives outside of their mom's body, and they don't even differentiate between their body and their mother's body until they're like six. I've seen 6 to 8 months old. They start to recognize that like their mom is not physically a part of their body.
Right.
I don't think we should be sharing custody to
but like newborns. Also, if you have a law on the books that requires the following disclaimer, you should rethink how you've worded your law. Here was something out of Arizona. Quote, a spouse does not have to stay in an abusive situation while waiting for the divorce to be finalized. Protective orders and other measures can be issued to get away from domestic violence while the divorce is pending. Or maybe you could just let the divorce happen.
Yeah. Also, there was a Supreme Court ruling like not that long ago that ruled that police don't even have to like enforce protective orders.
Right. So like, yikes.
Yeah, I think that the lawmakers that are trying to make these laws sound less shitty and have less potential shitty outcomes, I think that those efforts are really noble. It's one of those things where it's like, yeah, maybe you should just make it a law so that there needs to be a custody hearing on the books before dated for after the birth of the child before the birth is finalized.
Totally.
Just get it on
that
the books.
That seems so reasonable.
Right? Seems
yes.
So. It should be, you know, like, and if you don't show up, it's like a big deal. But, you know, you got, I don't know. It's
right.
Just, yes. Anyway, happy Women's History Month. Yeah. The second we get pregnant, we stop being people. People
Happy
minus.
Women's History Month.
People minus. I have, okay, Alyssa, I have a stupid bullshit story.
Okay, I am so ready for your dramatic retelling of what is happening that I'm just going to put my feet up. I am officially, my feet are up, and I am here to enjoy story time with Erin about some of the dumbest shit happening in South Dakota.
Okay. South Dakota is a state we don't talk about very much because nobody lives there, even though it does have two senators. It's totally fine. It's fair. It's normal. The Senate's good. So last week, the South Dakota legislature is in session. South Dakota legislature, mm-hmm. not bringing their best, not their brightest. There are. No. Yeah. The South Dakota State Legislature met last week, and a state senator named Tom Pishka, along with another state representative, introduced a resolution commemorating Aunt Jemima. They wanted, I swear to God. It was supposed to commemorate Nancy Green, who was the mm-hmm. model who played Aunt Jemima. And it seems completely out of nowhere because, like, she never lived in South Dakota.
She never lived in South Dakota?
No, South Dakota.
Shut up. I thought this was all based on some, like, local hero stuff.
No, she never lived in South Dakota. These two fucking weirdos just introduced a resolution that was like, let's commemorate Nancy Green's contributions to like pancake culture or whatever, which was, I found when looking into it, I was like, this is so weird. It was essentially based on a boomer Facebook meme that was passed around back in 2021 after the syrup brand announced that they would no longer be using the Aunt Jemima iconography. The reversal on the iconography was in part, it happened on the tail of the George Floyd protests, and a lot of brands that had some questionable imagery in their marketing were sort of like, let's revisit this. So after Aunt Jemima announced that, there's this fucking weird boomer Facebook meme that was like, this lady was actually an icon and a success, and she got very wealthy making pancakes and was like the first ever living mascot. And all of that shit was false, debunked in 2021 in an article in USA Today. So fast forward a few years. Look, I know stuff takes a while to make it to South Dakota. Trends, music, whatever. But we all have the same internet now, Beyonce's internet. We all have access to all of the same information at all of the same time. So it's not like these people are waiting for a Pony Express USA Today newspaper to be delivered from back in the year 2021. So they introduced this super weird thing that was like, whereas, like, let it be, whatever. It was super, super weird. Okay. Fast forward to this week. Tom Pishka, one of the people who introduced the weird resolution, was just barred from the floor of the House and the House lobby for the remainder of the legislative session.
And why was he barred, Erin? Why was he barred?
He was barred for leaving a bottle of Aunt Jemima syrup on the desk of State Representative Chris Conzett, who had killed the resolution to commemorate Aunt Jemima. So this guy, this fucking weirdo, was so mad that he was so mad about his Aunt Jemima resolution dying that he put a bottle of syrup on the desk of the representative responsible for it.
Now, this is hardly Rahm Emanuel with a dead fish head in someone's bed, right? Like, it's not that. But let me say something. I kind of stand with him on this. He was kind of offering up this largely benevolent thing. And why would someone just go kill it? It's like, who cares? Why did she care enough to kill it?
I think because it was based on a fucking lost cause, like,
I guess,
fucking racist lie that was like kind of along the same lines as actually the slaves were happy. Like, actually, this woman who was being exploited, we're making up this whole story about her so that people can feel like white people can feel better about this fucking
when you put it that way.
Corn syrup, not even good. Look. I'm sure.
Look, I know. Can we actually just take a pause? You and I both say that word very differently.
Syrup?
Yes, I say syrup.
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 Huh. Interesting.
I know. I just wanted to point that out. It's like a nice thing.
Yeah. Well, a Canadian, I think any Canadian would take my side that any false fake syrup is trash and maple syrup all the way. But yeah, so I think he was trying to be intimidating and he left it on, you know, he left it on this person's desk and here's how they got to the bottom of it. They caught it on they reviewed
which
the
is amazing.
Video. This is like some South Dakota Crime Stoppers stuff. They were like, we got to solve this mystery. This is the only thing that's happened in the state. And they reviewed video and they caught him leaving the syrup on the desk. And he
busted.
He got in trouble. he got in trouble. Also, I'm going to say that this guy
and they were both Republicans, right?
I mean, everybody in the state is a Republican.
Yeah, fair
but
enough.
I think
I just thought it was. I thought intra-party fighting was funny.
Yeah, it's anarchy in the GOP. But you know, I think I also want to point out that this guy does sound like a little bit of a piece of shit. State Senator Pishka in 2015 had a protection order for domestic abuse filed against him
That's
by his
not
ex-wife,
good.
Which was later dismissed. Leave people alone who don't want you in their space.
Yeah, I guess just stay away from people's desks. That's like a fundamental thing we learn in like kindergarten.
Yeah, don't. It's so weird. Anyway.
And the desks are kind of the same.
Yeah, anyway. It's very weird. And that's what's happening in South Dakota. And that's like a really good example of why we don't really talk about the state much, because that is the height of.
That was big news.
Height of drama.
South Dakota.
Height of drama in SODAC. All right. We got to take a quick break. When we come back, interview with Washington Post senior critic at large, Robin Given. Make sure to subscribe so you never miss conversations like this one and share with a friend so your friends won't miss them either. No gatekeeping hysteria.
Menards' 11% rebate is here. From lighting to lumber, from doors to floors, the bigger the project, the bigger the rebate. From painting projects to that new kitchen makeover and designing that outdoor space of your dreams, save big on any project you're tackling. Hurry into Menards for an 11% rebate on everything. Mail-in rebate is a merchandise credit check, not a point-of-sale discount. Redeemable on future in-store purchases only. Not on future purchases on Menards.com. See store for details.
Save big money at Menards.
And welcome back. You're listening to Hysteria, the podcast for people who know that you can say more with a killer outfit than you can with a formulaic speech. Our guest today is an award-winning senior critic at large at the Washington Post with expertise in politics, race, and perhaps most importantly, fashion and the arts. Robin Given, welcome to Hysteria.
Hi, thanks for having me.
We're so glad to have you back. So in the past, people attending the State of the Union have used fashion to make statements when they don't have the microphone. And it seems to be happening more and more in recent history. For instance, women wore suffragist white in 2020. In 2022, many members of the chamber wore yellow and blue to support Ukraine. What have been your favorite fashion statements from States of the Union in the recent past?
Wow. From a political messaging point of view or from a fashion aesthetics point of view?
How about let's do both?
Both.
Well, I mean, I think that the white that was marking the 100th anniversary of the 19th Amendment was really powerful, in part because I felt like it sort of encompassed a lot that was going on at the time. It was that historical marker. But it also just sort of reflected, and I wrote about this sort of white-hot fury that was coming from a lot of the Democratic caucus, particularly the women. And it was also the State of the Union when Speaker Pelosi, sort of at the end of President Trump's speech, sort of very neatly stacked up the papers of his speech that he had handed to her at the beginning, and in one motion ripped it in half. So that white just kind of encompassed the power of, you know, women voicing their opinion, their fury, and also this kind of you know, sort of righteous indignation.
Do you think we see more and more dressing to convey a message now because of social media?
Yeah, I mean, I think people are very, are really acutely aware that, you know, almost every occasion is being not even preserved in photographs, but immediately, you know, deliberated over via visuals. I mean, I think there's like real-time dissection of what people are wearing and what it means, how it fits into an environment, how it reflects a situation. And I think that, you know, it's, you know, a generation of sort of political consumers who are also really acutely aware of the visual in a way that I don't think existed even a decade ago.
Mm-hmm. This week, Kyrsten Sinema announced she will not be seeking re-election. I know that she's somebody that you've had thoughts on in the past. Are you going to miss her?
I'm absolutely going to miss seeing her. I mean, this is someone who was or is incredibly disingenuous in her use of fashion. I mean, this is someone who makes very conscious decisions about how she is going to dress in ways that are very much not in sync with tradition or sort of even traditional expectations. And then sort of voices this dismay or disgust when someone notices that she's not dressing, you know, in a traditional manner. It's sort of like, you know, going into a room with your hair on fire, and when people ask, would you like us to put your hair out? They look at you and say, fire? There's no fire.
Don't give her ideas.
Don't give her ideas. Robin, let's chat about first ladies and their SOTU moments. So do you remember when Michelle Obama wore a sleeveless dress to the State of the Union and everybody gasped and clutched their pearls?
Oh, you mean Armgate? Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I'm not, I don't even, was it like technically a State of the Union or was it a dress?
It may have been a joint session.
A joint session. But yes, she was wearing a sleeveless dress. If memory serves, I think it might have been Narciso Rodriguez. It was a beautiful dress. It was sort of these tones of burgundy, Merlot, something like that. And I don't think there was any debate about whether or not she looked nice, but there seemed to be this real meltdown that like her, she had bare arms in the chamber. And one of the things that I thought was just priceless was that for all of this, you know, back and forth and just like furor over the fact that she was wearing the sleeveless dress and how it was just so inappropriate and that it just had never been done. And lo and behold, you know, Jackie Kennedy had worn a sleeveless dress to a State of the Union. And no one had batted an eye. And of course, you know, in terms of fashion, Jackie Kennedy could do no wrong in some people's eye. So I thought it was a moment that said, it was a little bit of a fashion Rorschach test, I think. Mm-hmm. It said a lot about what I think was to come for Michelle
right.
Obama.
Well, and then she ended her run as first lady in 2016 when she, again, wore sleeveless. This time it was a marigold color Narciso Rodriguez. And at that point, a lot of critics had gone out and said, well, she wore this because he's a married gay man, son of immigrants who had fled Cuba, and Trump was in the middle of stoking anti-immigrant sentiment. The same night, Kim Davis, the Kentucky County Clerk who had refused to issue marriage licenses to gay couples, also attended the State of the Union as the guest of an Ohio congressman. She wore a red, white, and blue shawl. Again, reported in the same article as Michelle Obama's marigold. Oh. Do you think people are reading too much into things when they report in that amount of detail? Are they projecting it? Does anything move the needle or actually matter?
Can I answer the last part first?
Yeah, of course.
Things matter. I mean, I don't, in this case,
No. I mean, I think if you show up for a State of the Union wrapped in a flag, an American flag, I don't think people are reading too much into that. I mean, you are clearly trying to make some kind of statement about what America means to you, or your vision of patriotism, or your idea of sort of how you fit into the American fabric. You're trying to make some kind of statement. With Michelle Obama and the choice of Narciso, another Narciso dress, you know, I don't think that you're reading too much into it, in the sense that, you know, by that point in the administration, it was very well known that she made these fashion choices considering a lot of things, and particularly considering the designer who created it. And she had spent a good portion of her time in the East Wing really elevating smaller design houses, spreading sort of the spotlight around. She was not one of those sort of a traditional first lady who had a tendency to choose one or two designers as their go-to. Mm-hmm. And that was sort of it. And it also felt kind of like a nice sort of full circle moment, because she had worn a Narciso dress at that first speech, but she'd also worn one of his dresses I think on election night.
Election night, yeah.
I remember that dress, like, very, very clearly. Mm-hmm. I was there.
And, you know, the funny thing about that dress is people were so confused about it because she'd worn a cardigan with it. Mm-hmm. And it was a sleeveless dress, and I guess maybe it was a bit chilly or something. And she slipped on this black cardigan, and people were sort of scratching their head and not sort of quite grasping what the dress was all about. And I remember Narciso was like, well, you know, she put a cardigan on with it. And I asked, oh, was she not supposed to do that? Was that a problem? And he's like, I would never say that a woman turned a dress into a problem.
That's I was like bracing myself for it to be a,
yeah, very, me too,
a very fashion answer that's like, it completely disregards the comfort of the woman wearing it. And I was like, oh, that's actually really nice. That's really
nice. Kidding? She was wearing my dress. That's all I cared about.
Oh, my goodness. Okay, so sort of rapid fire now. Robin, is there anyone who was treated uncharitably or as though they weren't remarkable or having anything to say in the past who you think deserves a second look in terms of, like, the way that they use fashion to make a political statement?
She wasn't overlooked, but I do think that if I had to go back, it would be nice to spend a little more time settling into Nancy Pelosi when she was Speaker.
Hmm.
Because she did use her fashion, I think, in ways that were really interesting and powerful. But, you know, there was obviously so much going on, and she clearly, you know, had the microphone as well as the gavel. And so there wasn't quite as much attention paid to her style, other than I think a lot of people quite admired it as something that conveyed power without sort of losing a sense of sort of classic femininity. But, mm-hmm. you know, when she took back the gavel, you know, in this bright fuchsia dress, when she walked out of a meeting with Trump in that sort of coral colored coat and put on the mm-hmm. sunglasses, I mean, there were these moments that I think really resonated, and just that image told you so much about who she was and her attitude at that time, that I think it would be interesting to go back and look more closely at her style over the course mm-hmm. of her career.
That's such an interesting point. And as you were talking, Robin, I was just thinking about the concept of women dressing for other women and how mm-hmm. some of the messages that Nancy was sending are messages that women were more ready to receive, I think, than men. Like her wearing those super, super high heels all the time, I don't think men have an intimate relationship with how much that hurts. And how challenging it is to be on your feet, you know, being in public, wearing shoes like that all day. Like, I felt the pink and the red and some of the color choices she made were things that I think as a woman, I was like, that's so cute, or like, that's a great color, or it felt like it was being telegraphed to one gender and like, this is for the ladies.
I often felt that she was, you know, stating to women who, and perhaps women who were really looking to kind of grow into their power, mm-hmm. that, you know, you didn't have to change who you were in order to excel in a place that is male dominated.
Mm-hmm. If you could help dress somebody for the State of the Union, or if you could advise them or give them a thumbs up or thumbs down, who would you want to dress and how would you dress them?
Well, I'm not a stylist, mm-hmm. so I do refrain from offering styling advice. But
are there any designers that you think certain political figures should take a look at when they're considering how to dress?
Well, I always think that they should look first to American designers. And I think they should spread the love a little bit beyond Oscar de la Renta and Michael Kors. Though I love both of those brands, I think they're wonderful. I think that people like, you know, Gabriella Hearst and The Row by Ashley Mary-Kate Olsen are beautiful brands that convey authority without being fussy. And I think are also very easy to wear. The Row is very easy to wear if you've got lots and lots of money.
Quiet luxury.
I will add that. But, you know, if I had any wish for the State of the Union, I mean, I hope that there aren't any more like giant fur-trimmed white coats in the chamber.
Oh, man. Cruella de Vil meets the White Queen from The Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe. It's okay to be mean because she's terrible. Robin, have you heard any rumors that we're going to see any coordinated group dressing at this State of the Union?
You know, I haven't. I don't know. Someone on I'm sure our political team has like the total lowdown on that. but no, I haven't. I have not heard about any phalanx of Congresswomen in white or any all black dressing or anything like that. I'm assuming that the members of the Congressional Black Caucus will wear their usual African stoles or whatever, however they might be described. And, you know, I think it's always interesting to see what the First Lady will wear. Mm-hmm. Because, again, she is, you know, hosting people in her box, the camera is on her, and, you know, that entire tableau is, you know, just one giant political statement.
Mm-hmm. Okay, Robin, so moving away from the State of the Union specifically, as you probably know, Aaron and I read everything that you write. And recently, you wrote about the leading 2024 candidates' ages. We got to ask you, do you think Biden dresses better than Trump?
Oh, well, yeah. Yeah.
Like, what makes him better at dressing his age than Trump?
So I have to admit that I have had this long obsession with President Biden and his pocket square. Mm-hmm. And I have a dear friend who is a men's stylist. And I remember having this conversation with him, and I said, just please tell me, am I like losing my mind that I'm so obsessed with this pocket square? And he assured me that my love for it was not weird. But one of the reasons why Biden is a much better dresser is because his suit fits. And often men tend to wear suits that are a little too big for them. because they want to be comfortable. Mm-hmm. And they think that, you know, a baggier or looser fit is going to make them more comfortable. So Biden's suit jackets really fit his frame. And his trousers are also hemmed to the right length. They break slightly over his shoe, but they don't puddle. And there is a tendency for, you know, if you're not precise about the tailoring, to let the shoe, to let the pants puddle. And it mm-hmm. creates kind of a sloppy look. And there's also the, you know, that element of the pocket square, which is this very sort of, you know, it's very traditional. It's very old school. It has an air of formality to it. But I think it also lends a bit of polish because it's always a white pocket square. You know, it's not some, you know, giant colorful flourish or anything like that. It's not ostentatious. It's very precise in its folding. And it's tucked very neatly in there. And I think all of that combines, you know, to create this very precisely tailored, elegant look. And he's very good with the sportswear as well, which is where a lot of men often get in trouble when it comes to, you know, the sort of business casual look. With, you know, with Trump, his suits just don't fit. And, you know, it's not even that they're, you know, poorly made. I mean, these are expensive suits that just aren't tailored well. And I think that's a real lesson for people, that it's not the cost of the clothing, it's whether or not the clothing fits you. And just don't even get me started on the tie. I mean, the tie, which hangs down to his crotch, is just unspeakable.
Yeah, there's something about Republican men and bad fitting suits. I know there are Democratic men that do it too, but it seems like it's maybe more concentrated on one side of the aisle. And sometimes it seems to me like they're trying to message their voters who also dress sloppily. I don't know. So lastly, can you settle an insane social media debate once and for all?
The dress was gold.
No. Close. Close.
It is about a dress. Was D.A. Fani Willis wearing her dress backwards during her testimony a few weeks ago? Please, Robin, settle it for us.
No. I mean, come on, social media. Are you kidding me? Okay, first of all, we think that this woman doesn't know how to dress herself. Secondly, I think that shows a real lack of familiarity with the vast array of styles that women's dresses come in. And third, you know, even if she was wearing it backwards, oftentimes people look at a dress and decide, you know what, it looks better the other way, and I like it the other way, and I'm confident enough in my own sense of style that that's the way I'm going to wear it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, on the Cezanne website, they show people wearing cardigans backwards. So
people wear cardigans backwards. People, you know, wear, you know, sweatshirts backwards or inside out. And yes, sometimes people make a choice to, they wear a skirt backwards. They wear, you know, all kinds of things backwards. I was once at a fashion show where all the shoes looked like they were on backwards, but that's a completely different thing. But no, the dress was not on backwards.
Okay. Thank you for settling that for us, Robin. Robin Given, columnist at The Washington Post. Thank you so much for joining us, and we look forward to having you back.
Thank you, Robin.
Thanks.
We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, more hysteria. Some announcements for the class. The Crooked Store's latest collection is all about protecting reproductive rights and telling lawmakers to keep their bans to themselves.
The No Trespassing collection features four different designs inspired by states where abortion freedom is under attack. There's Stay Out of My Swamp, Stay Out of My Hole, Stay Out of My Prickly Pear, and Stay Out of My Strip.
Can you guess which state is which one?
Yeah.
Which one's Stay Out of My Prickly Pear?
Arizona.
Yes. Stay out of my strip. We know what strip is.
Vegas. Vegas.
Nevada. Yeah.
Yeah.
Stay out of my hole. I don't know which
Wyoming.
One. Yeah, but like Wyoming
right?
is
Jackson Hole.
Yeah, Wyoming is a lost cause though.
Don't know. And I don't know. There are a lot of swamp potentials.
Florida.
Oh, right. That makes sense, too.
Florida. A portion of the proceeds will go to Vote Save America's Fuck Bans, the Fight Back Fund, which is currently supporting abortion rights organizations across key states like Arizona and Nevada. Head to crooked.com/store to shop the collection.
Join Crooked today at 6 p.m. Pacific Standard for our State of the Union group thread. And while you're waiting, you should check out our latest episode of Inside 2024, where Cody Keenan, Jon Favreau, and I break down states of the union now and past. If you're not already subscribed to Friends of the Pod, don't worry. This time around, you can watch along on the Pod Save America YouTube channel. We'll see you there.
And welcome back. You're listening to Hysteria, the podcast for the girlies who are very curious about Kate Middleton's whereabouts and otherwise don't ever really think about Kate Middleton.
I really don't.
I don't, but where is she?
Erin, she's missing. And that picture that they put out the other day where she was allegedly in the car with her mom, you and I both agree, that did not look like her.
Sus. Kate Middleton has not been seen in public, just like walking around. She hasn't been doing any public appearances since Christmas.
Right, because she had a surgery. They said she had abdominal surgery and that she would be out for a couple months. But it's left people very curious as to what sort of abdominal surgery takes that many months to recover from. And I don't know.
Yeah, she's
it
just
seems like you got to be in for a dime, in for a dollar. If you're going to give us that much information, you got to go the extra mile and just like close the circle.
There's been other stuff going on at the same time with the royals that has had people thinking like, what is going on? Like William canceled William was supposed to deliver a eulogy at his godfather's memorial service.
Right.
And he backed out at the last minute to attend to quote unquote personal matters.
Mm-hmm.
That's a pretty serious personal matter if you're skipping a funeral that you were supposed to speak at.
It feels that way. And Prince Charles went in to get his prostate checked and came out with some form of cancer. I think they've confirmed it's cancer. And Harry flew over, but again, nothing serious. Like, what?
Yeah, it's all very weird. I feel like they need to have like a medical consultant working for the royals to help them lie better about stuff.
Say less. I don't know. It's like they gave us enough information. They gave people enough information for people to become dangerous with it.
Yeah, because they were like abdominal surgery. And then people were like, well, there's not that many abdominal surgeries that require a 2-week stay in a hospital to recover. Like, that's weird. And why isn't she been seen? You know, blah, 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 blah.
Right.
And what I think is very funny about the royals is I was listening to coverage of Kate Middleton's like alleged disappearance and then like brief reappearance, which was clearly coordinated.
Like, let's shut everybody up and take her around town in the Audi.
Yeah, clearly coordinated with like people who knew that she'd be driving by a certain place at a certain time. So the photograph could be snapped and whatever, dispel any rumors. Yeah, so I think that the royal family is a little bit like England's etiquette team. Like their soccer team, and everybody watches and they're like, ooh, that, you know, every time they make a public appearance, it's like a game, you know, like, ooh, did they play this game well or did they dress right or did they talk right or like she curtsied weird or whatever. And they analyze it like it's a post-match analysis. And it's just been really fun watching all these people being like, I don't know about Kate Middleton's performance in this etiquette match.
I don't know how we feel about her, how she's acting out her recovery of abdominal surgery.
I hope that she secretly wants to divorce William. That's my favorite conspiracy theory. And
yeah, that's a fun one.
Go Kate. Diana out of there. All right. Do we have anything else we want to talk about? Anything you're keeping you sane?
I have a petty.
Okay.
So, Erin, here's the thing. I know none of us want to watch Donald Trump. Like, I don't want to watch Donald Trump. Like, his presidency and having to see his mug on cable news every day was really bad.
But then also when we don't see enough of him, we lose track of some of the batshit stuff that he's saying. Mm-hmm. And I saw something that really gave me pause. Aaron, he was on the campaign trail in Virginia, where he has repeatedly vowed, but doubled down, to defund public schools that require vaccines. He has said he will not give one penny to any school that has a vaccine mandate, and that he will take federal funds, all federal funds, away from public schools that require vaccines. In Virginia, like most states, they require measles, mumps, rubella, chickenpox, polio, etc. I find this particularly troubling since his home domicile is the state of Florida, which is in the middle of a like fairly troubling measles outbreak. The Florida Surgeon General has told parents to like ignore what's going on and keep sending their kids to school, even unvaccinated kids. And just like FYI, measles can result in some really fucking horrible pneumonia. Mm-hmm. But like these are the idiots that we are dealing with. And while I don't want to talk about him, I did feel like this is a particularly between Trump saying shit like this and RFK Jr. trolling out there still. I just feel like we're losing sight of some real science.
I think this is some Project 2025. Like very ominous garbage. Mm-hmm. I think ultimately taking away faith in public schools and instilling fear in people on all points of the political spectrum, everyone from like anti-vaxxers to people who have immunocompromised kids who
right.
like they want to make it so that more and more people pull their kids out of school.
Yep.
And who takes care of the kids when the kids are pulled out of school? Mom.
Who, Aaron?
Mom,
who?
They want us back in the fucking kitchen. And they're trying to, like, force us in whatever, by whatever means necessary. That's the long-term plan, I think. The short-term plan is a bunch of kids are going to get really sick for no reason other than the fact that these people are monsters.
It's fucked up.
Yeah, that's not,
this,
I mean, that's
I found
not
this
petty.
Really disturbing.
That's
no,
not
it's
petty.
Not petty.
That's very, that's... That's very.
It kind of falls in the nether region of nothingness because it's not petty and it's certainly not sanny. I guess it's just like necessary. I don't know.
God. What? Do they have like a writer's room of just terrifying nonsense where they all sit down
like,
and they're like.
Rejected storylines from Jerry Bruckheimer movies. Let's see if we can bring them to life.
Yeah. Are you bored? Are you trying to create the first scene in like a new pandemic? Like,
right.
Do you want a new pandemic? Or, yeah, this is so dumb. Dumbest timeline. Okay. Well,
what about you?
I'm trying to think. Oh, I have a sanity corner, actually.
Oh, delightful.
So I'm reading this book right now that is really, really good. It's called Y/N by Esther Yee. And she's just a fantastic writer. I don't even – it's sort of about this this woman who is living in Berlin who gets obsessed with a member of a K-pop group. But the plot isn't really what is so great about the book. It's just her writing. She's a phenomenal writer. It's weird.
That's awesome.
The book is, like, weird. It feels, like, alienating. And the way that she writes is different than the way that – anybody else writes. And I think it's her first novel. And it's really, really, it's really blown me away. I'm like almost done with it. And I'm doing the thing where I'm reading it very slowly.
Oh, yeah. When you don't want it to end.
Yeah. To savor it. So Y/N by Esther Yee is just fantastic. And I think it's out in paperback now. I saw it in Barnes & Noble when I was there the other day. So.
Oh, I'm going to check it out.
Yeah.
New book.
It's a weird book. It's a weird book, but it's like kind of mind-bendy and cool and really good. All right. That's all the time we have on this week's episode of Hysteria. Thank you so much to Robin Given of The Washington Post for joining us. We always love to have her on. She's so smart. Alyssa, thank you for being my ride or die. Listeners, we love you so much. If you want to get in touch, hysteria@crooked.com. And there will be more Hysteria for you next week. Don't forget to follow us at Crooked Media on IG, Twitter, and TikTok. Subscribe to Hysteria on YouTube for access to video versions of your favorite segments and other exclusive content. And if you're as opinionated as we are, consider dropping us a nice review. Hysteria is a Crooked Media production. Caroline Reston is our senior producer. Our executive producer is me, Erin Ryan. And Alyssa Mastromonaco is our co-producer. Fiona Pestana is our associate producer. The show is engineered and edited by Jordan Cantor. We get audio support from Kyle Seglin and Charlotte Landis. Our video producers are Rachel Gajewski and Megan Patzel. And thank you to Julia Beach, Ewa Okolate, Adia Hill, and David Tolles for production support every week.